podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,400 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit Lynda.com/AllAboutAndroid. That's LYNDA.com/AllAboutAndroid. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung, HTC, and other Android devices are worth at Gazelle.com. And by 99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 295,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/AAA to receive a free power pack upgrade valued at $99. Hello and welcome to another episode of All About Android, episode 160, recorded on Tuesday, May 6th, 2014. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Ron Richards.
I'm Gina Trapani.
Hello, team. Assemble, unite. We are here to talk all about Android and other related products and things and services, and maybe patents.
Oh, yeah.
I know. I feel like we can't avoid this discussion today. It's like I have to. It has to be in there.
Wait, do we get patents and lawsuits?
Yeah, it's going to be It's going to be a top-notch news section, let me tell you.
Fantastic. When I saw the news come down, I said, "Oh, it's going to be fun this week."
Yes. Tap dancing all over those lawsuit stories. But we are not alone. Joining us today is Noble Ackerson. He's the lab rat and founder at Byte and Atom Research. It's great to have you on board today, sir.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you on. We had Cecilia Abadi on months ago, and you work closely with her on your projects at Byte and Atom Research. Tell me a little bit about what you guys are working on right now.
So Cecilia is the CTO. She is the person sort of running the show as far as product is concerned. And we're all sort of drones to whatever she wants to do. I'm just a visionary.
Sounds like a hierarchy I can get on board with.
I like the honest approach as to how things work.
You do know that Cecilia might actually watch this, right?
Oh yes, I'm sorry. I'm just kidding. We work great. We're a distributed team. She's out in Southern California. I'm in Washington D.C. And we build a virtual fitness companion using wearable computers. Our first hardware partner was Google, and we launched on the My Glass Google Glass App Store a few months back.
I've heard of Google. Yeah, it's a big hardware partner, I'd say.
That is an awesome partner, and we're humbled that they even give us the chance.
So. Right on. Well, that's awesome. Well, it's good to have you on. You were asking before the show, you were like, what, you know, it's great to be on the show. I have no idea why I'm here. And the reason that you're here is because if you go to Google Plus and you kind of, you know, stir around the communities around Glass and Android, your name and your face seems to pop up a lot. And that's just probably because in my mind, you're one of the people that I see online always, like you always have Glass on. There is no question about it. You're a Glastronaut. You're dedicated to the platform. And obviously you are because Lynx Fit is kind of built around it. So that's why you're here. You bring that perspective and we're happy to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So this week we're going to be discussing, of course, the verdict of the Apple-Samsung patent case. Let me tell you, it's going to be a great discussion. It will be. It's interesting, I suppose. Amazon's smartphone is revealed in pictures. Paying for things with Google Glass. A pretty major Maps for Android update and more. What was that? I think my screen turned off, and when it did, it decided to...
You just bought something with your tablet. Yep.
I did that with my voice, didn't I? That's okay, as easy Google. As it's going to be.
Okay, Google, buy car.
Did
you see that Amazon cart thing? You can now add things to your cart from Twitter?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. See, this is what it's all about. Our bank accounts are going to get depleted very quickly.
This is where we're going, huh?
Yep.
Digital tools disguised. They're actually cash registers.
Good job, Brian. Very good.
Brian has the dollar sign transition at the ready. I could tell. He's using it more and more. So in my mind, I can understand how his template works. I'm going to replace you someday, Brian.
Not possible.
A lot of concern, by the way, expressed in our email and on Twitter about how you got razzed just a little too much last week, Brian.
Oh, yeah. No big deal. That's just how me and Ron are. Right, Ron?
Well, you're a robot, so I don't really have to worry about your feelings.
I have no emotions, which makes me sad.
all those lights on your eyes, man.
I know. It is kind of creepy. All right. Hey, let's...
He's a very small shell script.
You think a mere mortal could do this?
No way. So let's get into it. Let's dive into the news.
Oh, right, the news. Yeah.
Thank you for being on top of it.
The great dollar sign transition, and then he blows the news back.
Hey, you know, you got to pick your battles. Yeah. Speaking of picking your battles, we've held back about talking about the Apple-Samsung patent trial that's been happening all month. It's been happening all month, and there have been people that have been covering it pretty darn well. I have to say The Verge and Recode had some pretty awesome people on the story. Now the verdict has been reached. We might as well talk about it a little bit. The verdict is that Samsung was ordered to pay Apple around $125 million. That's down from $2.2 billion that they were seeking. It's a big difference there in damages related to two patents. Data tapping, which is things like making a call from within an email, so having some sort of like a phone number and launching into a call from an email, and autocomplete. Apple is to pay Samsung around $158,000, pretty small amount, on a patent that I was looking and I could hardly find exactly what it was, but it wasn't that significant as attributed to the number. And while it's a courtroom victory for Apple, obviously it's not the huge monster ruling that I think they were hoping for. But it is interesting to note that this trial focused almost entirely on software, not the hardware side of it. Much of the software in question could actually be attributed to Google's Android more than Samsung's touches. Things like auto-correcting misspellings as the user types, recognizing phone numbers in a block of text, make it actionable. A lot of these things are just part of Android, yet Samsung was kind of called to question from Apple. And Google actually has a stake in helping Samsung kind of work through these damages. It was revealed that, you know, as part of their agreement with Samsung, if, you know, this goes to court and the ruling is against Samsung, that Google is kind of going to help them pay the damages as a result of that. Do we think that Samsung's ever going to, or that Apple's ever going to target Google directly? Because it really seems like, I feel, you know, in previous patent trial discussions that we've had about these similar stories, it always seems like these features and things that are in question aren't necessarily always the OEM's fault, but it's kind of the greater Android, but yet Apple's going after the little guys. And I use that in air quotes because I realize Samsung is not a little guy, but I don't know. Noble, do you ever think that we're going to see Apple target Google directly in one of these lawsuits?
I would imagine if Google ever slips up and infringes on any, you know, existing protected IP on their, you know, Google Experience side, perhaps, you know, they may be ripe for a lawsuit. However, the way Android is sort of structured, it's going to be very difficult to go after Google directly because it's, you know, Android is sort of set up as a sort of a consortium of other partners, and it depends on how deep that infringement goes. I don't think Google's an easy target to go after. However, on the flip side of things, it's strategic for Google to be, you know, for Slide to Unlock, for example, which is clearly sort of a borrowed quote unquote feature from Apple's features. They that's sort of an add-on that Samsung brought onto Android, so that's ready for the picking.
Sure. What do you guys think, Gina?
$125 million Samsung has to pay. Is that about how much they pay for advertising for a day?
Yeah, right. I know. Like, the amount is just, it's paltry, right?
I mean, that's, well, that's nothing to these companies. The other thing that occurs to me is, like, my app, you know, detects if there's a phone number in a task and launches the dialer. Like, I, you know, I'm like, this is what there's, I mean, this just seems like such a natural part of a phone app. It seems crazy. I don't know. Well, these things always seem crazy to me.
Yeah, they do.
To sue one another about. But geez, I mean, if Apple wanted, there are lots of developers who have implemented that into their apps. Things like that, launched a call from an app.
Universal,
you know, and get some money. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think their strategy is to necessarily, even though this is more software based, is going after the software patents. I think their strategy clearly is going after somebody who's actually making phones and threatening their market share. I mean, yes, Google is the underlying basis behind that. But the moment, you know, to answer your earlier question, Jason, you know, will Apple go after Google? The moment Google starts actually making phones the way Apple does, that's when they do it. In the meantime, they're going to go after all the OEMs.
Yeah.
Do you guys think the strategy? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Go for it. Take it.
Do you think the strategy could be, you know, pick out every single Android partner, you know, and maximize profitability? Obviously, if you win, so the chances of winning a lawsuit, you know, spread over all the partners, are higher than just going after one juggernaut, Google.
Well, yeah. And the thing is that if they hurt the pieces that are helping make Android, you know, kind of hurt on Apple's market share, then they hurt Google in the process. I mean, and of course, you know, they went after Samsung as opposed to going after HTC, because who's spending more money in advertising, as Gina pointed out, who is showing an alternative to iPhones and iOS, and who is actually threatening, you know, in terms of the number of devices that are being sold. Samsung was the biggest target. If HTC had spent billions of dollars on advertising and everyone was walking around with an HTC phone and they had all this kind of thing and were a threat, you know, the eye of Apple would turn on HTC.
That's true.
Yeah, it's true.
So, and you know, a part of me just kind of believes that this is not the last that we are going to see of an epic, you know, the epic. I feel like anytime it's Apple versus Samsung in the courts, it's, you know, suddenly it's got these full feature, you know, features with multiple articles that get lumped into them about how this could change the face of mobile and blah, 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 blah. I just think that we're going to kind of continue doing this. And if this one is apparent, oh, that's... That's powerful right there.
Anytime you can make an Eye of Sauron comparison, you got to take it. I, for one, am very disappointed that we haven't come up with some sort of Law and Order gavel sound to go with these lawsuit coverage over all these years. I just thought of it.
Just basically the Law and Order sound, the dong dong.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
One? Is that what you're talking about? Yeah. I like that. Somebody do that, because we can't do that on the fly. But there we go. So that's one court case of excitement that you looked forward to tonight. But we have one more, don't we, Gina?
Yes. In other courtroom news, a class action lawsuit brought by two consumers and a group of handset makers charges that Google is being anti-competitive with its mobile application distribution agreement. That's the thing that handset makers have to agree to in order to include Google's suite of apps and services in their Android device. The lawsuit seeks injunction against Google and monetary damages. Terms of the agreement included as of a document from 2011 that was revealed in the Samsung Apple case, that those who want to install one Google app must install all of them on the device. Google search is set as the default, with specific info as to where the search box has to appear. And part of the terms stipulate that Google will legally indemnify device makers for the use of their apps, as we discussed in the Samsung Apple case. Google's response to this, to Recode, was anyone can use Android without Google, and anyone can use Google without Android. Referring, of course, to the Android open source project version of Android that anyone could install and use if their mobile distribution agreement doesn't work for their purposes. So this is going to be kind of interesting to see. I don't know. What do you guys think? This MATA MADA, this mobile distribution agreement, has been sort of a point of contention, and it comes up all the time in the conversation about whether or not Android is actually open, right? And we've talked about this a lot on the show too, and the conflating kind of the open source Android versus the Google Experience Android. People consider Android, you know, the Google experience, but there's actually an open source project that you can run on anything and you don't have to get any sort of permission from a Google. Do you think that Google is going to get out of this by saying, hey, you can use Android without agreeing to our terms?
This is where I don't know. This is where I don't know if I'm just kind of like shrouded because, like, I'm, you know, kind of a fan of the things that Google does, or I'm a fan of, you know, Google's version of Android and that kind of stuff. But I don't know if it's necessarily anti-competitive. Everybody's making a lot of money in the mobile space, so you know, I don't know. I feel like this kind of goes into territory that I only slightly understand. You know, the greater implications of it. But Google does offer a version of Android that works absolutely. It doesn't entail their services at all. And that's kind of Google's right, right? Like, we have the open source version that you can choose to use. If you want to use our version, well, then you have to play by our rules. And I don't think that's being anti-competitive, because that still leaves the door open for companies like Amazon to do what they do and still make a great business out of it. Amazon's not hurting. They're doing all right using Android and not using any of Google's services. So then I think it becomes a trickier thing to prove.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's definitely skirting the razor's edge when it comes to these class action lawsuit type, you know, kind of people. I could see the argument going, yeah, you're providing this, you know, there's an open source version, but you're putting all your resources towards this one, and therefore that's antitrust and anti-competitive and all that sort of thing. I mean, that's where the idea of dominance versus anti-competitiveness gets cloudy, and we end up in the courtroom having to deal with litigation to define that. Because I definitely think that there are people, I don't believe it. I agree with you. I think that they're kind of playing both sides in the middle, and they're saying, okay, yes, here's this, you know, open source option, but here's our option, which is better. Come play with us. But I could definitely see the argument that people are making and dragging them into court over it.
Yeah. And I know we're probably going to get emails about this if I don't mention this too. This isn't necessarily, I'm realizing this as I was speaking, you know, speaking about this just a few seconds ago, that I'm kind of a little wrong here. This isn't necessarily about, you know, other Android device makers feeling like it's anti-competitive to release a smartphone. It's, from what I understand, it's more about Google's requirements of using their service on their version of Android means that they lock more people into their search products and into, you know, and that might be anti-competitive against other search companies trying to do search, because Google has basically a monopoly on search on all of their Android devices that aren't AOSP. Yeah. And that's where it kind of gets into the world that I feel like maybe I'm a little out of, you know, it's a little bit out of my ballpark to answer that wisely. I mean, but
yeah. None of us are lawyers, right?
Right. I know. Believe me, I tried to get some lawyers on the show today because I was like, we need some help on this one. I know we do, and everyone was busy. But anyways, Gina, what were you saying?
I mean, it is tricky, right? This is, hey, if you want to run the Play Store, if you want to run YouTube on your phone, then you have to do all these other things too. You have to agree to, you have to have all the search, you know, the search engine placement here. You have to agree to these other terms, and then you can use the word Google. You can get Google approved for your device. And that's been how Google has sort of, enforced their Google experience version of Android. But I mean, you know, once the Amazon phone comes out, which we'll talk about, and there are other types of phones, it doesn't feel like consumers are locked into that yet. But I'm not sure. But I see what you're saying. This is about consumers saying, I can't buy a Google phone and easily opt into another search engine, or have, you know, have choice about my experience. It's just, it's either all Google or nothing.
Yeah. Very reminiscent of Microsoft Internet Explorer, mm-hmm. you know, and that. Yeah.
I mean, am I mistaken to think that, and I have a Google experience phone like all of us here, but it's pretty easy to sort of change the default search provider. By default, it comes with Google, and it makes sense for it to come with Google, but you can always go in and switch it to, you know, Amazon search if you wanted. Right?
Well, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the Google search bar that's ever present up at the very top of the phone,
got it.
That's always Google, and that's always there. And that's part of the stipulation, right, is that Google search is the default search in that box, and B, that box is at the top of your home screen on this, in this particular place, and you can't move it. Otherwise, you're not agreeing to the MATA or the mobile application distribution.
Yeah, I've been trying to change that bar to Bing for years, and it just won't change.
See, I don't know. There we go. So
thank God, there's a class action lawsuit that will allow me to add Bing to my phone.
Ultimately, between both of these, I think one thing is true, and this always seems to come up on more and more with patent cases particularly, but with cases like this in general. Who wins? The lawyers win. The legal team wins. They're making lots of money. Thank you very much, by the way, for the... There we go.
All right.
Oh, man, that has a lot more reverb than I remember it having.
Yeah.
It's a little muddy.
Yeah, it's a find
a cleaner
version.
One. Yeah. All right, Ron, what else is there? Completely switching gears, by the way.
Well, every time we talk about Google Play Music, I feel as if there's always someone that points out it's not in Canada. Well,
yeah, all access.
Not anymore. There you go, Canada. You've spoken, and Google makes a major move for streaming music in Canada.
Thank you.
Google Play Music will be coming to Canada with their streaming service, all access subscription, including 25 million tracks. It offers playlists, digital stations, and storage in the cloud for your music locker. This is particularly, important because nobody else has broken into Canada for streaming music, for two reasons. One, because of a lot of the royalty and, contract negotiations around streaming music in Canada have been very difficult. Google Play Music is currently in the U.S. and Europe and Mexico, but nowhere but Canada. Also, streaming music hasn't really taken off in Canada due to the high cost of bandwidth, which I didn't even realize. I guess people in Canada pay a lot for their internet service, and so streaming music, the way we do here in America, so frivolously, we just, you know, data just flowing all the time. Apparently, mm-hmm. becomes cost prohibitive in Toronto. Who knew? Mm. So Google stepped up and they threw their weight around. And so now for $7.99 a month at the introductory price and then $9.99 a month, Canada, you can partake in the music. So
welcome. It's good to have you on board.
Yes.
I'm sure there are other Google services that you still don't have access to that we'll hear from you about. And we're very sorry. Hopefully this is a sign of things to come.
But is that true? I mean, have you guys heard that about the internet, the cost of internet access in Canada? I'd never heard that before. And maybe I'm just ignorant to it because I don't go to Canada.
I didn't know about that. I just assumed it was as plenty as it is here.
Yeah, the quote at the bottom of the article up on the CBC News was, Canadians pay amongst the highest online rates for internet subscribers on the planet. The last thing you want to do is running a streaming service on your internet device, your mobile device, 24/7. You won't be able to afford the bill when it comes at the end of the month. Those are some strong words.
I still don't buy that, though, since Google... I think the reason why I didn't get released was mostly because of the deals and licensing agreements. Because with the streaming thing, Google could have simply just released the product without the radio aspect of it. And if you guys are familiar with Google Listen or Play Listen or whatever it's called, you can actually just pin sort of set it to only download music while it's on Wi-Fi, and then sort of have you sort of stream it locally when you're roaming and stuff like that.
What is Play Listen? Is it a Chrome extension or what is it?
Just the Android app. So I think.
I see. The option inside Google Play. Yeah. Gotcha.
The chat room is saying that apparently there are a lot of bandwidth caps in Canada. I'm seeing 15 gig cap, 60 gig cap. The prices don't seem that. I mean, someone said that I think the Canadian dollar is similar to the American dollar. But yeah, I'm seeing, like $80 for 50 down, which is similar to what I pay here. But if there's a bandwidth cap, then what's the point? So,
right.
Yeah. I will admit I'm spoiled by my unlimited data plans, the fact that I've got 50 down and 50 up here at home and I've got unlimited through T-Mobile. Like, I don't think about that anymore.
Ron,
you don't get
throttled?
I got throttled once and I think they learned their lesson.
They didn't do it again.
Well, what happened was that I got throttled once using my phone for tethering a lot, and I think it's because I buy my phone through the Google Play Edition, not from T-Mobile directly. I'm just swapping my SIM card. So I think that there's a loophole in that you sneak in and they're not paying attention to our devices. Don't, knock on wood, I hope. And it was like a year ago that I got throttled when that happened. But I haven't been throttled since. But admittedly, I haven't been tethering as much. And so I haven't really gone more than 5 gig on my phone in a month and a while. So We'll see what happens in July when I hit the road. I'm going to be on the road a lot in this month, actually, so maybe that'll happen. So,
cool. Yeah. Let's
interesting stuff.
Yeah. Cool stuff there. Let's do an email, Ron.
All right. Got an email from Sean, who wrote in and says, picking up off our discussion from last week, why does everyone pick on the rear camera on tablets? I use mine a lot, but not for snapshots. I use mine to scan documents to convert to PDF, or in some cases, OCR and text on paper. I also use it for snapping notes on whiteboards or other people's paper notes to add to Evernote or Google Keep. One other occasional use is while doing a video call, I sometimes flip the camera to the rear camera to show the other end something they need to see, like the view of the beach where I'm working.
Jerk.
Once in a while, I fire up Google Goggles to snap a barcode or a QR code, useful for adding two-factor authentication for Google Authenticator. For some reason, using smart tools, I can use the camera as a magnifying lens, which is awesome on a 10-inch screen. When I was deciding between a Nexus 7 and a Nexus 10, the back camera was one deciding factor for myself that weighed heavily in the decision of going with the Nexus 10. So, Sean, those are great uses for the rear camera on tablet that I never even thought of, and you're absolutely right. And it shows that's why they put a rear camera in your tablet, so good on you. But Sean does say, he says, that said, those folks that hold up their tablets to snap a photo opportunity of Obama passing by look ridiculous, and I agree.
It's when I
see people with tablets at concerts taking pictures. Oh, it drives me crazy.
Why take a tablet to a concert, though? That seems
who's got a tablet at a concert? I mean, seriously.
Come to San Francisco and go to the Fillmore.
That's true. Them. Yeah, we live in a strange... Yes. Strange area of geeks. That's true.
Or go to Disney World. I was in Disney World and I saw people walking around like zombies with their iPads taking pictures. Yeah.
I suppose the best camera you have is the camera that you have on you. But
yeah, exactly. I like to hold up my tablet and watch the concert through the camera.
Oh, yeah.
Because then it's like
the whole show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is a Louis C.K. bit waiting to happen here.
It totally is. But it's so true. Like, you're at a show, and maybe not with a tablet, but with a phone, and you're tempted. You're like, man, I got to get video of this so I can remember it later. And then you spend the whole song there videotaping the concert and staring at your viewfinder. You realize you only half heard. You didn't actually watch the show. And then when you play it back later, it sounds like crap anyway. So what's the point?
I used to take one of those little, not a flip camera, but the little Kodak ZI-8 to shows because I want to get at least one or two songs on video. That way I can remember it and all that sort of stuff. And I did that for about a year and it was fun, but I found myself that I was missing the song.
Yeah.
And I don't want to see a video of me rocking out, you know, my hand moving because I'm getting on the camera. So now I just, when I go to a show and I'm going tonight, you'll probably see, if you follow me on Twitter, you'll see it. I'll take one picture at the beginning of the show to be like, hey, I'm seeing this band. And then I put my phone away and I just enjoy the music. So.
Because you know what? There's almost guaranteed to be other people that are taking pictures of that show. Probably better pictures that you take because they're probably closer, maybe whatever. And in some cases, they're recording video of it that you can find on YouTube pretty easily a couple of days afterwards. So there you go.
Exactly.
You don't have to do any of the work. And all the enjoyment is yours.
I find self-recorded videos at concerts to be very, very unwatchable.
Yeah, most of the time they are.
With the sound blown out.
Yeah.
In my defense, some of the videos I took were pretty decent. That Kodak ZI-8 had a pretty good mic. I mean, like, I spent a while looking for one because I couldn't take video with my old phone because the sound was blown out and awful. But, like, I was actually surprised you could adjust the mic level and you could get a decent sound out of it. And I've got a couple of concert videos that I'm really glad I took.
Yeah.
But also my arm holding the camera up would hurt. So it's just, I'm better off just not. Because I'm old.
Yeah, don't hurt your arm.
Don't hurt your arm, Ron. Yeah. Save the arm. Yes. Save Ron's arm.
So, someone in the chat room says two words: GoPro head strap. And nope.
What about Google Glass?
There you go.
I was gonna say, Noble. Have you taken video of concerts with Google Glass? Does it work out okay? Or
no, I don't. I'm not a big take videos at concerts guy, but I did do a cherry blossom walk, and I did notice a lot of people with the tablets and phones and stuff like that. And while I was just walking around and talking to myself, telling my face computer to take pictures. So,
there you go. Yeah, who knows which is the better situation there?
Oh, hey, is it?
Who's this? Quick.
Hey, I was at that show.
Is this one of yours, Ron? I found it on your YouTube stuff.
No, I favorited that. I was at that show, but I didn't
see. There you go. You were at the show, didn't have to record the video. Boom.
Yeah.
All right. Let's pull ourselves out of the weeds a little bit here and thank our first sponsor of today's episode. That would be Linda. Love Linda. At lynda.com, there are hundreds of courses on web design, development. You can learn just a ton of stuff. Lynda's a fabulous place to go when you want online learning. They have just a ton of videos there on all different technical topics. And you can go there and you can learn things that you never knew how to do, or maybe you know how to do something and you want to learn how to do it better. That's what Lynda's all about. You can learn everything from web fundamentals, mobile development, to creating a responsive web design, user experience. If you're interested in creating an app for mobile platforms, lynda.com has created a playlist for building a cross-platform mobile app that is available now at lynda.com/allaboutandroid. This is just how you keep up to date with your software. Pick up new skills. Like I said, explore new hobbies. They're easy to follow video tutorials. If you want to create a graceful user experience for your website, build interactive web applications, design your website with Photoshop, lynda.com offers thousands of video courses on all of those topics and makes it really easy. You can learn those latest tips, real work techniques and best practices from their courses in Photoshop, for example. I watched a ton of videos on music production and setting up your space and mixing and all that. But lately, here at Twit, we're actually transitioning from Final Cut 7 to Adobe Premiere. And I mean, Lynda's the perfect place to go for that. They just have a ton of tutorials from the basics of Premiere to diving into different, techniques and ways to work with Premiere to better equip you to be a better video editor. That's what it's all about. It's a great reference and resource. Over 2,400 courses with more added weekly. All lynda.com courses are produced at the highest quality. This is not a homemade video on YouTube. Lynda.com works with software companies to provide you updated training the same day new versions hit the market. And this is so true. New software hits the market, and within a day, you're seeing videos on how to use it. And it's a great resource for that. You'll always have the very latest skills. At Lynda.com, the instructors are accomplished professionals at the top of their fields, and they're passionate about teaching. And their courses are for all experience levels, beginner, intermediate, advanced, whatever you happen to be. You can watch from your computer, your tablet, your mobile device. You can pick up where you left off, whether you have 15 minutes or 15 hours. Lynda makes it, structures it so that it's easy for you to learn start to finish on your own terms. And they actually have transcripts that you can search to find quick answers immediately and jump right to that point in the video. It's super cool. Lynda.com also offers certificates of completion when you finish a course, which you can publish to your LinkedIn profile, which is, great. If you're a professional in the field, shows others that you have that extra training and that you know what you're talking about. So it's only $25 a month for access to the entire lynda.com course library, or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan, which includes exercise files that let you follow along with the instructors using the same project assets they do. And you can try lynda.com right now with a free 7-day trial. Visit lynda.com/allaboutandroid to access the entire library. That's over 2,000 courses free for 7 days. That's lynda.com/allaboutandroid. And we thank Lynda for their continued support of All About Android. Fantastic stuff. Go check it out. Of course, when you're done watching this show, then go watch their videos. There we go. All right, let's get into hardware. So, Gina, are you excited now that you've seen it?
This is kind of exciting. Let's just put it out there. Boy Genius Report published the first alleged rendering of the alleged new Amazon phone. And you're not going to believe it, you guys.
It looks like a phone.
Black rectangle.
Yep.
It's nuts. It's a black rectangle. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. So there's the phone. Brian's got up on the screen there. It is indeed a black rectangle. It looks nice. It's got rounded edges. We've got a physical home button. We got some chamfered bezel going on.
It almost looks like it has a rubberized bezel or something. That like side bumper almost looks
It does look like, the back does little... kind of look like a bumper there. You got kind of speakers on the bottom, charger on the bottom. This is the phone that allegedly has 6 cameras, front, rear, and then the 4 in the 4 corners to do that 3D magic that it's supposed to do when you're looking at products on Amazon or looking at your wall wallpaper. And also supposed to, the other rumor was that there's going to be some sort of Amazon Prime data plan.
Not really sure
what that's supposed to be. It is kind of interesting. Not sure what that's supposed to be. Rumors are some sort of partnership with AT&T. Maybe it's unlimited streaming instant video. Maybe it's free Amazon. I mean, look, Amazon's going to go out of their way to make it as easy as possible for you to purchase things from them, particularly with this phone. So I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of excited about it. I really love how Amazon makes devices that are affordable and make getting the things that you want really easy. But I don't think that this particular phone is, I mean, my eyes didn't pop out of my head the way they did when I saw the HTC One. That said, I think it's better looking than most Samsung devices. Nothing too crazy about it. I don't know. What do you guys think? You guys excited about the Amazon phone? Do you want one?
Think of the concert video six cameras could take.
They're not, now Ron, come on. They're not full-fledged cameras, okay?
It's going to be a 3D rendering of the concert experience. It's going to be great.
It's like the concert from five infrared. Different perspective point of views. Yeah. Yeah. Concert recorded from five different people at once. I wouldn't say I'm personally excited about this in a I want to buy it sort of way, but the more I hear about it, the more and the renders look pretty sharp. I mean, it really depends around the price, of course, the cost, and you have to imagine Amazon's probably going to keep it pretty inexpensive. Some of the goodies like the Amazon the Prime. Connected, or what was it?
Prime data.
That could be interesting. Some you know, people are thinking that it might have something to do with like certain like Amazon suite of apps not counting against your data plan. So interesting stuff there. Maybe not for me, but I could see there definitely being a market for a phone like this, especially if it's priced right. What do you think about all this, Noble?
Is it just me, or does it sort of remind you of the Nexus 4 a little bit?
It does have a little bit of a Nexus 4 look to it. You're right.
As far as I've never really, it sounds very weird to say this on this show, I've never really been mesmerized by, you know, little black rectangle thingies. As long as they make phone calls and I'm able to sort of access all the apps that I'm already invested in. The last phone that I was super excited, there are a few phones that I've been super excited about. One was my Trio 700W, it was Windows 6.1 or something, and my OG Droid, and of course, the Nexus line of stuff. But that's pretty much it. I'm not really invested in the Amazon ecosystem, so it's going to be hard to sort of get me to, repurchase some apps that I'm sort of addicted to.
If Amazon was able to successfully pull in the Android enthusiasts, Amazon would be doing something crazy and right in a completely different way. But that's absolutely not their goal, right?
It's totally not.
Yeah,
I tried casting The Good Wife from, CBS.com to my Chromecast, and it was like, it was a nightmare. So I was like, all right, I'm going to get it on Instant Video. Wait, yeah.
Yes.
I purchased The Good Wife on Amazon Instant, and I was like, I'm going to cast this.
Oh, yeah.
And I had to, disable Silverlight, and it falls back to Flash. I mean, it was just like, it was so hard, and it was like, this shouldn't be so hard. There should just be an app. There's an app for the Xbox. There's Amazon streaming apps everywhere, and it's just so hard to do. And I just feel like I would use it so much more if it was easier to work with my Google stuff, with the
Gina,
cast and Android.
Gina, all they want you to do is download to go out and purchase the Amazon Fire TV. You won't have all these issues.
That's true.
Buy the Fire tablet or whatever it's called, and you won't have those issues either. So,
but I just want them to take the Kindle approach. They did it so right with the Kindle, which is like, get this everywhere, regardless. I just feel like if they did the same thing with Amazon Instant, I would just watch it so much more. Anyway, okay, sorry. That was my...
Their devices could still be tailored around their services in a closer integration, just because there's an app that works on all Android devices to stream your videos, for example, doesn't necessarily mean that an Amazon device loses all of its value. It certainly gets them more action. More people would love that don't have Amazon devices, and they definitely use it. There are tons of Prime subscribers that are, not running Fire or anything. So
that's a really, really good question why they won't do that, why they're so hell-bent against making just a straight-up app for Prime Video. I mean, there's got to be rationale, boardroom rationale for some reason. And, you know, who knows what it is. But, yeah, but the question you posed earlier, Jason, which is, you know, if Amazon wanted to do something to get the Android enthusiasts, you know, wouldn't that be something? What would that be?
Well, that's, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I don't see that happening.
Right.
Like, but, yeah, like, but, I don't
but
even
no,
know.
No, but yeah, but regardless of that happening or not, like, what would it take? Would it take just having a Prime Video app or supporting Chromecast? Or like, what could they, if they wanted to come in and say, we're going to take over Android and we're going to compete with Samsung and all that sort of stuff. That's, I mean, I'm like, I wonder what that would, what that is.
Well, it would not be what they've been doing in the sense that, you know, they're locking Google services out. Like, I think the Android enthusiasts, the people that watch and listen to this show, by and large, buy into the Google ecosystem. And that's a big reason for the power, you know, the influence of Android and why they identify with it. And I don't see Amazon doing that. That just doesn't make sense.
Ron, to answer your question, what would it take? I have an idea. Perhaps they should go the route of, you know, the Amazon experience and sort of OEM partner with, you know, the guys at CyanogenMod or Oppo or, you know, and just sort of join forces and have hardware manufacturers put the Amazon experience on other devices. And maybe that's what it might take, because people might be first excited about new hardware opportunities to sort of hack on and stuff like that. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
But I think the phone looks nice. I think I didn't look at it and go, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it has a nice look. And now that you mention it, Noble, it totally does remind me of the Nexus 4. The more I look at it, there's something about the kind of the back and the curve of the sides and everything. It just, it definitely has a Nexus 4 quality to it. A little less sparkle, though.
Just.
So Motorola has a new phone that they say is made to last and priced for all. It's going to launch at a London event on May 13th. That's next Tuesday. Not sure if that means, I guess that would be before the show. So hopefully we'll have all the information about this then. Could be the successor to the Moto G, possibly a version that runs LTE, possibly even less expensive. Or it could be the next Moto X, or it could be both, actually. Moto Maker posted a page with the next Moto X, and it's called Moto X Plus One. There's no pictures of it or anything like that, but they kind of, you know, if this is to be believed that this was on the Moto Maker site, Moto X Plus One, you know, I suppose that could be a code name, but I could see that being the name of the device. So who knows? We might find out more about the successor to the Moto X, which I guess in my mind kind of makes a little more sense, because the Moto X has been around for a little while now, and I'm sure people are wondering what the next step is now that Motorola is kind of away from Google. AFG, as they say. Sorry.
Well done.
Thank you. All right, so there you go. Moto X Plus One. So excited. Moto G, less expensive, something that's more accessible, priced for all. What do we think of Motorola's strategy?
So Sunit, I think his name is Sunit or Pony or something like that on Google Plus. He's one of the Motorola senior engineers. Mentioned he was going to India and posted that publicly. So I'm guessing, you know, a low cost, different market, perhaps available in this market before sort of low barrier of entry will make sense. I think it's a great thing to sort of get Google experiences in the hands, or Android rather, sorry, in the hands of as many people as possible.
Sure.
And Moto G was a great phone. I mean, we got it from my mother-in-law. She loves it. It's definitely the phone that's like, you know, if you want a really good low cost phone, that's the one. So I think that's a good strategy. I think it worked for them, and I think it makes sense that they would continue that down that road. Mm-hmm. I hope that they can do it well. AFG.
We will see.
Oh, that's funny.
Ron, what about LG? Speaking of G,
You can't, speaking of the Nexus 4, you can't forget about the LG. That old LG just keeps on kicking.
Yep.
LG announced about a week ago that the LG G3 would get unveiled on May 27th, but we've got leaked photos that show the phone, so you can see, you get a sense of what it's going to look like, as well as we've got some specs that have been leaked. It's those leaked specs are showing that it's going to be a 5.5-inch QHD display, 16 gigabyte, 2 gigabytes RAM, or a 32 gigabyte, 3 gigabyte RAM version, 3,000 mAh battery, 13 megapixel rear facing camera, with image stabilization that we also saw on the LG Pro 2. So the LG G3 is gaining some speed. We'll see if these leaks are confirmed on May 27th, but that phone looks a lot like an LG phone. So,
and quick turnaround on that one, because the LG G2 had a lot of buzz. You know, Chad, our technical director at the time, gave it a scalding review and got a lot of pushback from people saying, "Hey, what are you talking about? This is actually a fantastic phone." That was September, if I'm correct. And they're already, you know, coming right out of the gate with the next one. So,
well, maybe LG agreed with Chad.
Maybe so. It does look a little chromier on the back from that screenshot.
Yeah, it does. Sure does.
Yeah. It looks nicer, actually. I like that.
Well, we'll see. We'll find out on May 27th. So
there we go. Don't have to wait very long.
All right.
And what about the OnePlus? We have an update.
Smash your phone.
Smash your phone.
OnePlus One, the company that, you know, had that whole marketing thing where you smash your old phone and you get OnePlus One for a dollar. We talked about it last week. We weren't huge fans of the marketing push anyway. Well, they contacted the 100 winners of their Smash the Past contest, and they added an option for those folks to donate their device to not Smash, but to donate their device to the nonprofit team Medic Mobile, which takes those phones and puts them in the hands of healthcare workers in remote areas of the world. So, you know, winners can still smash them if they want, but kind of nice. Actually, quite a graceful recovery from from what was some bad press.
Yeah.
A lot of people saying, hey, this is a terrible idea. Why would you do this? Why would you kind of create this way? So I like that there's that option.
Pretty.
Still concerned they didn't think of that before they launched the contest, but hey.
Yeah, you know, well, pretty easy fix, too, like being able, you know, kind of turning right around. That's one thing they've definitely done with this promotional campaign. They've been very vocal with it, but they've shown in a couple of different ways that they're listening to the audience. That's probably because they have a lot to lose, right? They certainly have promised a lot. Their hope and their promise is to shake up the mobile, you know, world with, you know, with an amazing device that's low cost and that doesn't skimp in a lot of ways that they say devices and manufacturers do right now, including service and listening to their audience and fans. So I think that's great. Fantastic option to be able to donate their device where it's going to do some good instead of just sit in a landfill.
Good on them. So,
yeah. And then let's see here. A few things about glass. We have, this is interesting, I think. Google is supposedly testing ways for glass wearers to send money via Google Wallet on their glass. And I have to ask you, Noble, how does the thought of paying for your restaurant bill or splitting your tab with someone that you went to eat with your glass, like, is this something that you'd actually do? I feel like this is like, I don't know what problem this solves, but I suppose you might as well do everything with glass, so that would be included.
Well, not necessarily. I don't think I've ever had dinner with my wife at a restaurant wearing glass.
Yeah.
I've had glass for over a year now.
Right.
And that has not happened once. I think, I mean, if it's available and there's a use case there, there might be a weird opportunity to use it. For example, going to a concert with Ron, and right before he I asked him to a transaction to record a video for me on his fancy tablet, I might, you know, pay him a $5 surcharge through glass or whatever.
$5 for him to sacrifice the song recording it so that you can just enjoy it. I understand that.
He can do the recording and I can actually enjoy it. I don't think, I just like with the Gmail option, I believe you're able to send money on Gmail. I've used that once and really never really think of Google services when it comes to to transactions like that. Maybe that'll change if I use it more. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. It just seemed like a, like, I read that and I was like, oh, I wonder how many people have actually wanted to do this.
But, yeah. I mean, the more one thing that I would love to see is, you know, changing the way we think about, you know, transactions and point of sale and e-commerce. If Glass, I guess I can't really judge it. This is just a rumor. But right. if there is a seamless way for it to interact with their point of sale stuff in stores. I don't know how deeply embedded that wallet tap to pay option. Maybe I just sort of tap with my.
No, but that's a really good point, though. Changing the way we think about paying. I mean, like, so there have been two. These aren't Glass apps, but there have been two apps that have changed the way I've looked at paying. Like the Square app, where I forget which, because Square has got so many different things. Not the Square register, but the Square like wallet app. Mm-hmm. You know, there are places here in San Francisco where I can pay via that, and I never take my phone out of out of my pocket. They just see, they're like, "Oh, are you Ron?" I'm like, "Yeah." Like, pay by Square. I'm like, "Yeah." And it connects, and I can do it. You know, and then I just sign for it at their tablet, and then it works. Mm-hmm. You know, and then also, I think I talked about it on the pre-show or during the show, but there's this new app called Cover, which allows you to split restaurant bills with, you know, other people at the table, and you just tell your waitress, "Oh, I'm paying to Cover," and you never see it. And then you pull out the app, and then you can specify the tip, and it all pays and takes care of it. I like ways that challenge the paradigm. So maybe Google Glass is another way of, with Google Wallet as a way of changing that. It all boils down to the interface, and then also that feeling of security that you're not giving your money away to a stranger, you know, that it actually works, you know.
But, right. Yeah, and some people I've heard, you know, are saying like, "Oh, and you know, someone's just gonna walk right by to some Warren Glass and be like, 'Pay so and so,' or whatever the voice command is, and it's just gonna happen." And I guarantee you, that's not gonna be how it's gonna be implemented. Google would never do that. Just make it as easy as a simple voice command, and then suddenly money transfers. At least Google, prove me wrong. Like, don't prove me wrong. Rather, make it a little bit more than that, and I'm sure that they will. That would just be silly.
Yeah.
But. Actually, here's an idea before you move on. Yeah. What if, and I don't know whether this is a good idea or not, but what if the cashier, on the other hand, had Glass and would use the SKU or the barcode as sort of a way to sort of inventory stuff as, you know, people were purchasing it out? So the checkout line wouldn't require a scanner. It would just be a perpetually on camera that she would just look at and just, you know.
That would be actually pretty awesome, right? Like, the cashier looks at a pile of stuff, and all of the facing UPCs. That's what I was looking for. The facing UPCs suddenly just scans all of them just at sight, and boom, you've got.
Now, of course, that
stack.
Would burn the person's the right side of the person's face because Glass would be perpetually on. But if you think about it, it's a you know, a way that Google Wallet could work on the flip side of things.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There we go. Thank you. The dollar signs are always going up. Shouldn't they be raining down from the sky?
I have no control over that.
Oh, okay. All right. Cool. Sorry.
I was just going to say, we might be going to the well on the dollar signs. I'm just saying. It was funny the first time, Brian.
But money keeps coming up. Money will always be funny. Now, Noble, you are obviously your dedicated wearer of Glass, and that's, you know, part of the reason why I follow you on Google Plus, because you push kind of Glass into interesting places, and that's because you're dedicated. You're wearing it all the time. You're also developing stuff with LinksFit around it. Is Glass the future from your perspective? Is this the future, or is this just an interesting kind of way that you get to the future?
I think head-mounted and wrist-mounted, or you know, ankle-mounted wearable devices, or even, you know, clothes that we wear, anything that sort of has sensors and the ability to sort of, you know, talk to something else is the future. Glass is for me. Yeah, I'm definitely overdoing the Glass thing online, but yeah, it is my life. I wear it more than you, Gina. I wear it a lot. I do sort of adhere to certain bits of etiquette that I've sort of self-imposed. For example, when I'm at home, like right now, I rarely ever have it on because my computer screen is a little bit more convenient. I do have it on right now because of the show and just wanted to play the part. But it's always on when I'm out. It's always on, you know, when I'm working out. You know, what we're working on at LinksFit is to sort of turn wearable computers into personal fitness assistants, so intelligent fitness coaches. So not just Glass, but, you know, we're working with James Madison University in Virginia, an NCAA football and soccer outfit. And we're using different hardware and even Google Glass to give the coaches and trainers, strength and conditioning coaches, you know, better insights on how their students or their athletes are performing. So that's sort of the future of LinksFit. And I quit my full-time job a year ago in order to start this new full-time job. So to answer your question, absolutely, this is the future.
Excellent.
Absolutely. Get it? Absolutely. There you go.
I think it's clear even to folks like me who are not totally sure about Glass in my everyday life. I mean, wearables are certainly wearables in the fitness space. It seems obvious that it's the right fit, and that is the future. You know, particularly for health and fitness, sensors are the deal.
And I think, we were talking about last week. Really, the wearable segment started with fitness, with Fitbit, and all that sort of stuff. And it's interesting to see it evolve, and kind of like it's fascinating to see the wearable concept. The leading innovator is the fitness vertical, which I find fascinating. With the emergence of the watches, and then now a Glass, I think it'll be great. So.
Right.
Yeah, according to the CEA, they said, you know, I think this year we're slated to purchase about $1.4 billion in fitness-related wearable devices, and that doesn't even include Glass, because Glass is not considered a fitness-related wearable device. So that sort of goes to your point, Ron, and actually is sort of baked into our vision as well. We're saying we're not going to build yet another wearable device in order to prove our concept. We're going to go to where you are with your Android Wear watch or your Google Glass or your insert, you know, whoever is doing some other thing. As long as they expose the hardware to us, we can sort of do something cool with it. And we are actually also working with, you know, Android, the Amazon Fire TV and Chromecast, for example. We demoed sort of sending the Glass video to TV so you can enjoy your P90X but still get that coaching from the sensor, the motion that we're capturing.
That's so cool.
Very cool.
Did you see that Nike shuttered the Fuel Band project?
I know, right?
Yeah.
So many people nervous.
Well, I think this is less about the vertical and more about Nike. That's what I think it is. I mean, because clearly that was a product that people loved, and if they could make that work, I think that's more has to do with internal problems than actual, you know, the product is flawed.
So. Yeah, I had several friends who were like, "What?" Yeah. When that happened, because they just love their Fuel Band.
So I mean, they never released an Android-based. Just to bring it back to Android, they never released an app for Android. That's why I never really checked it out. It was iOS only, correct?
Right. Yes, that's right.
I really don't understand the strategy of shuttering the hardware. There's rumors that, you know, they're partnering with Apple and Apple is coming out with something. So they bowed out and cowered in fear or something. I don't know. It's just a rumor.
Yeah. Well, the Apple Nike partnership, I think, is part of the reason why there was no Android app. So that could be it.
I've never thought of that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there are the rumors that Apple's developing a watch. So who knows? Maybe there's some sort of element to that. But yeah. So
I heard that on Secret.
Don't trust anything you hear on Secret, except the things that end up becoming true.
Secret could become one of those places where you can just spew any rumor and it's going to get picked up.
Yeah.
But so far, they've been batting above 500, so I guess.
I don't know about Secret, but that's for another show.
Yes.
Sorry.
I can go on about Secret, but I'm not going
all
to.
All about Secret.
Yes.
Our new show, All About Secret.
All right, Ron, take it.
Let's thank a sponsor. We want to thank Gazelle for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. Are you thinking about getting the new HTC One or maybe the Samsung S5? Did you just get a new Nexus 7 tablet or a Moto X? Well, Gazelle wants to buy or use Samsung, HTC, and other Android devices. You can lock in your price today and send it to Gazelle when you get your new one, because Gazelle's offer is good for 30 days. Gazelle makes selling your used gadgets fast and simple. Just go to gazelle.com, that's G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com, and find your item. Tell Gazelle the condition. They'll even buy broken phones and tablets. Get a risk-free offer for your gadgets and free shipping, and then you'll get paid fast by check, PayPal, or get an extra 5% with an Amazon gift card. Go to gazelle.com now and get your offer for your used Android or Apple or any other brand product. Some benefits of Gazelle: you get paid in cash. Payment is fast within a few days of the item being received. It's totally risk-free. The Gazelle offer for your device is good for 30 days, giving you time to transfer data or set up a new device. Gazelle will also wipe your data for free, so it's trustworthy. Gazelle has paid more than $100 million to over 70,000 customers. It's super easy. They've got fast shipping. Most items qualify for a free box. Fast process, no listing hassles. Pretty much they make it really simple. So, you know, someone like me who's got the original OG Nexus 7 and I want to upgrade to the new one, I'm going to look into selling my old Nexus 7 to Gazelle and then buy the new model so I can stay current. All right. So find out what your Android device is worth. Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com to find out. Do it now because your device may lose value the longer you wait. Every minute your device gets older and depreciates in value. So go to gazelle.com now and find out what you can get for that used device.
Tick.
And thanks for sponsoring this episode of All About Android.
Tick, tock, tick, tock. That's the sound of your device losing value right there.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Let's jump into apps. All right. Navigation. I love if a maps update comes out, I like immediately scramble to try and find it because I love maps.
Yeah, maps are huge. Well, I mean, maps are such a big way we use our devices. This is a really significant maps update, Google Maps for Android and iOS. Not that we care about that. But okay, a few new things that you get. Lane guidance tells you which lane you need to be in order to make the upcoming turn in navigation. Very nice. Save maps to use offline when you're leaving for a destination, going camping or going to be someplace offline. Yeah. Very nice. Yeah. Better filters for finding businesses when you need them. You know, what bar is still open? When's the last call? And
that's
this
important.
Is interesting. Mm-hmm. Uber app integration. So you can compare transit and walking directions with Uber access in one click. So if this is only works if you've got the Uber app installed, and if you're in a city that Uber exists, you'll see Uber as one of the examples. And then finally, easier access to save locations. So really big, nice update here, particularly that the Uber option honestly kind of surprises me, I have to say. Like for Google to integrate a non-Google product into one of their core apps, I mean, I guess you could argue that Uber is kind of a Google product because right. They invested so much in it. But that's a big deal. It's a big deal for Uber. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, the Uber integration was the one that made me shake my head and read it again. Like, what? Did I read that correctly? Like,
me too.
Kind of crazy. Kind of awesome too, though. So,
yeah, but it kind of makes you wonder. I mean, are they gonna add integration for other ride sharing services that they didn't invest hundreds of millions of dollars in? Like, it made me a little.
Well, that would be anti-competitive. That would be anti-competitive, Gina. Why would they do that? We don't want a lawsuit.
Yeah, it did take me by surprise too, but it has to be that the Google Ventures kind of link there. I don't know, and it makes me wonder if there's going to be any sort of integration into any of their other services as a result, because I don't feel like we've really seen this in Google Apps, this kind of direct integration, you know, as like a feature set that they push out. And if we have, it hasn't happened very often. So I don't know if maybe this is a sign of things to come.
Not products that they don't outright own, right? Like Waze integration, yep. Zagat, you know, we see that, and that makes sense, right? Because those are products mm-hmm. that they own. But the Uber integration kind of, I I'm not in the Bay Area, and you know, and I've never lived there. I know that everyone loves Uber, and I haven't actually used it myself. I tried once, and it didn't work out. Whatever. And I'm in New York now, and there's Uber here, but it seems like there's a lot of Uber worship that goes on.
Yeah, there is, and I've never used it.
I cannot live without Uber in San Francisco. I do not have a car. I'm going to use Uber tonight once I finish the show. Oh, and Lyft too. Lyft is a good option as well. Good job, Brian. There you go.
How does Brian do this? I'm kind of in awe. He's pretty quick with this stuff.
Having a serious discussion about car services, and you know, but Lyft with their pink mustaches is well known, and actually Lyft is expanding. Like they recently had an announcement that they're going to like 30 more cities or something like that. That's crazy. Yeah. But yeah, no, I don't own a car, and you know, I get around through public transit and stuff like that. But Uber and Lyft are my two go-to apps I probably use the most. So
yeah, I mean, I grew up in Brooklyn. There's car service here. Like if you need a car, like you call a car service. Granted, I much prefer to use an app. I don't want to make a voice call, but it just feels like, oh, this is just a car service that's in an app. It doesn't seem like that big a deal. I know that it's not the same in California. There aren't, you know, because it's just not as dense, right? So it's a lot easier, you know, when you can see cars near you and all that.
Yeah, and now we're getting into the validity of these car service apps. But like, you know, for years in San Francisco, you could not get a cab. You just couldn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, like you would be out at 2 a.m. and depending if you were in the avenues, you're stuck. If you were, you know, when you're out in the mission, the lights are off, whatever. A lot of times I've seen cabs, the light is on the for hire, but they're going to a fare that someone called for. So they just won't pick you up. Like it was like from 2007 to 2010 or so, it was just miserable. And then Uber came along and then at least me and my peers, stuff like that, we all started doing that. I haven't been in a cab in ages. Now, when I go back to New York, it is so easy to just hold your hand out and a cab shows up and now you can pay a credit card in the cab. It's not as there. And then it becomes down to a fare aspect. Whereas, you know, can I get a cheaper fare from a Lyft or from an Uber or a cab? And that's kind of, you know, that's usually how I make my decisions on how I use it. But like I was in Chicago and I was at a big convention at the McCormick Center. If you're familiar with Chicago, the McCormick Center is not really that, you know, downtown in any capacity, right? And there was a huge cab line. I just opened up Uber and a car came and picked me up and I skipped the line. So it's kind of it depends on what city you're in and what your needs are and where you kind of are. But, you know, New York doesn't really make sense, but San Francisco, it's a gold mine. LA, it's great. Seattle, it was great. So,
what about DC? Noble, are these services in DC?
These services aren't too welcome in DC. There's a lot of issues regarding Uber in DC. Yeah. I know Taxi Magic is was founded here as a competitor to Uber, and they sort of partner with taxi cabs, and it's an app, and it works similarly. They I don't know. Uber, I have only encountered and used in the Bay, and frankly, I find it just as expensive as taking a cab in some cases. So I don't know.
But it's easier. It's more convenient.
I didn't mean to derail the conversation onto the validity of Uber, but it was just surprised me that integration into Google Maps.
Yeah.
I guess it's useful. I mean, if you're trying to get directions, you know, so transportation to a place, and you have the option of transit, local transit, a cab, or driving, walking, or I guess Uber. It should be interchangeable, though. I think we all agree there.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. If you think about it, it goes down to that minimizing the number of clicks. Like, for example, like I'm standing on the street. I know I'm meeting my friends at this bar. I'm going to go to Google Maps to find it. And then, okay, great. I know the intersection it's at. Now I need to exit out of Google Maps, load up the Uber app, call a car, and then tell it. It's so much easier to just say, boom, take me there. You know, so that integration is kind of interesting. And it's the idea, like also it's similar to like seeing a phone number. Going back to what we said earlier, seeing a phone number in a web page and just tapping on the phone number and then launching the phone app.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You know, it's that minimizing the number of clicks. And if that's, you know, if Google Ventures has backed Uber a lot and they can test it, now the question is whether or not they can support other services. Will they offer this to Lyft? Will they offer this to Sidecar? Will they offer it to Taxi Magic? Who knows? Mm-hmm.
Now,
I think lane guidance is the best feature, in my opinion, with the rollout.
Oh, yeah. No, that's totally. Cool. That's a feature that a lot of people have been wanting. It's kind of saying this is the last, you know, thing that standalone GPS devices have. The navigation doesn't. Now it does. So that's going to make a lot of people happy. Absolutely.
Now, what's...
Oh, yeah. Go for it.
I was going to segue. What's also going to make people happy is the update to Google Now or the Google Search app. Which added a whole bunch of interesting, possibly creepy features, but for you car-minded folks. So now it will remember where you parked.
It does this really well.
And which also, like, you know, the moment this rolled out, how many app startups who are doing, remember, I think I did Valet in the arena. They're like, no,
yeah, the collective.
No. Yeah. So, yeah. So Google Now, remember where you park. So let's say you're driving to the mall and you park in that huge mall parking lot. It's going to remember where you parked, and then you go into the mall, and then it will tell you when you're near a store that has a product that you recently searched for. Wow. So I'm like, hey, I want to get a new baseball mitt, and I'm going to search for prices of baseball mitts, and I'm going to go to the mall, and it's going to say, hey, Sports Authority's in this mall, and they've got that mitt you searched for.
Yeah,
that's crazy. And then it also is going to track what stores the mall has inside of it, which is pretty cool. So you know, you're really looking for, you know, whatever, the pretzel stand and Ann's pretzels. You can know that it's in the mall, so that's pretty cool.
You know, it's in there. You don't know how to get there, but yeah, it doesn't give you a map to the pretzel store.
Which is really, you would think it's the 21st century. I could get a map to the pretzel store.
Come on, but... priorities, Google.
Jeez. But so the folks at Android Police did their typical APK teardown, and they found some interesting stuff, where things like you can see friends' photos where you are near the location that it was taken. So within the APKs, there's code there that's kind of cool, that if you're in a location, you can see the photos your friends took. Real-timer integration, which is interesting.
Yes, finally.
Yeah. More travel reservation information, like multiple legs, boarding platform, reservation numbers, etc. And now music controls in Google Now. So you can control your music from Google Now. So
more and more
information is getting pulled into that in that Google search app. And it's getting more and more powerful every time they update it or plan to update it.
Yeah.
So.
Who knows? We might hear more about all of those at I.O. Although, what was the feature? I think it was the finding out what's in the stores. Sorry. The product that you've researched. That was revealed by Ron Amadio a year ago on Android Police in an APK teardown. So that tells you right there kind of an interesting kind of
the lead time.
The amount of time that it can take. That was a year ago that he discovered that, and now we're just seeing it. So so they have a lot of stuff in the works, obviously.
It's like the super app, Google Now. It's just swallowing up all these little apps and just pushing you the information that you need, you know, without having to do a parking app and a, you know, shopping app. And
yes,
it just is all there. Yeah.
And that's the thing. Those people who are making those apps now, is that a threat? Like, if you're doing a very niche specialized service app, will Google find it like, oh, that's a good idea, and then pull it into Google Now and obliterate you?
Yeah.
Wow. Yes. Yeah. And then you move on and make something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're in that space. I know over in I.O., they were talking about how the whole idea of Google, of I.O. last year, they were talking about the whole idea of Google search was to sort of have something personalize what you're interested in the background. And I noticed a glaring thing yesterday with the Google Play thing that we were talking about. Listen Now is actually a feature. So the radio feature that you pay, I think, $5 a month for, also is doing the same thing, where it's personalizing stuff in the background like Google Now does. And then sort of just, you know, every time you log in, it gives you something, you know, an album that it thinks you like or you've searched for in the past. It's actually very interesting.
It's giving me lullaby renditions of David Bowie.
I feel like that's a really good. That's
kind of awesome. Good.
It's that kind of works. There we go. All right.
I love those Rockabye Baby albums.
When you got to listen to lullabies, you might as well listen to Rockabye Baby.
It cracks me up when it's Metallica. You know?
Yes. Yeah, so, hey. Yeah. They're pretty awesome, you have to admit. Mm-hmm. And finally, you know, Google did what they do sometimes, and they release a bunch of apps all at once. We saw this a few days ago. Google broke out individual apps for Docs and Sheet, which may be a little confusing. It used to be that all these things were housed inside Drive, and Drive still exists, but Drive more and more is seeming like, you know, your collection, and then individual apps for Docs and Sheets, so that you can have your, you know, an individual app that controls your spreadsheet and your Word processor. Do they even call them that anymore? Your doc. Word processor just sounds 80s to me. And then Slides is coming soon, so there you go. I wish they would integrate chat into the mobile versions of these things, but they don't have that yet. Hopefully soon.
Let's take a very quick break here and thank another sponsor of today's episode. That would be 99 Designs. And 99 Designs, fantastic service. We've actually recently used them to, you know, create more logos for our stuff. We're constantly releasing these hoodies and sweatshirts and stuff that have awesome Twit logos that are designed by folks on 99 Designs. What is it? If you're looking as a business, you want to stand out, it can be challenging. And, you know, particularly if it's a competitive field, you're going up against a lot of people and what, you know, a lot of other companies that have the resources for great design. And that's what visitors to your site or whatever, you know, your users are, that's what they see first. So it's an instant snap decision that they make, whether they like what they see or whether, you know, the competitor, maybe they like that better. It's important to create a logo that's original, but communicates what you do. And you don't want to fall for the trap of getting a logo that looks like your competitor's logo. There's all sorts of things to consider here. Remember, a great logo reveals your industry, personality, and point of difference. And looks incredible doing it. Looks easy doing it. That I think is the key. You don't want your logo to look labored. The best logos just look easy. So how do you get started when you need a new logo design? One easy and convenient way is to visit 99designs.com. You can get a unique logo that you love for as little as $299. If you launch a logo design project today, you're going to have dozens of concepts from designers from around the world by next week. These people, they just kind of wait for these contests to go up, and they immediately get to work, and you end up winning because you get just a ton of designs to pick from. Pretty awesome stuff. So visit 99designs.com/AAA. That's going to get you a $99 power pack of services for free. A power pack gives you more designer time and attention. 99 Designs will bold, highlight, and feature your design project in 99 Designs Marketplace. And you're also going to get nearly twice as many designs. Just cool stuff. Just poke around the site. You'll see the quality, the level of quality that you can get here. And it's not just logos. You know, you can get everything designed. Your app, like I said, apparel, you know, bumper stickers, the whole nine yards. They do it all. These designers are talented, and they'll help you with your project, whatever it may be. Visit 99designs.com/AAA to check it out for yourself. And we thank 99 Designs for their continued support of All About Android. All right, everybody, it's time for the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Last week, we had four apps in the arena: Front Back, Hello SMS, Fitbit, and IFTTT. The results are in. Yeah, kind of figured this one. IFTTT, if this then that, wins by pretty much a landslide, 67%. Way to go, Gina. Another win on your belt.
Thanks.
Good job.
That was a gift from the gods. Yeah, that one for me.
Hello SMS comes in second at 24%. Fitbit third at 5%. Front Back, wow, did not get any love. 4%. That's okay. It's okay. It is kind of one of those apps that's like cool the first couple of times you do it, and then you're like, okay, I get it. You know, so anyways, whatever. Whatever, I'm not bitter. I'm just going to win this week instead. So I'm going to get right into my app. What do I have? I thought this was kind of neat. You remember, I don't know how long ago it was, but there was this app that allowed you to just grab random pictures from the ether. So you'd post a picture, and it would go out, and somebody else would receive it, and then you could kind of see, man, why am I suddenly blanking on the name of it? Anyway, somebody in the chat room is going to know it immediately and remind me of it. This is that, but for sound, for audio, and it is called VoxBox. And it's kind of cool that what makes this an interesting demo is that we don't really know what we're going to get. So this could go really tragically wrong, and awesome. That's always a lot of fun. So let's see here. So first of all,
I love the old school design.
Yes, it's got a nice design. It's iOS as well as Android. So you have both platforms, and it's just kind of interesting. So before we listen, let's go ahead and send something. I'm hoping that this plugged in here doesn't override the microphone. We got to make this really unique. So hookah shaka hookah hookah. There we go. Okay, I don't know how unique that was, but that's all I could come up with. So there you go. So you submit it. you get your little viewfinder. Like, I like the design of it. It's kind of cute. And sends it out. You have no idea who got it. You have no idea where it went. All you know is that somebody's going to get that, and they're going to go, what the hell was that? Now let's listen.
Sugar.
All right, sugar. There we go. Let's listen.
Some people really do need a high five in the face with a chair. It's just very hard when the evil is nearly 80.
All right, so see, there you go. This is why this demo is
risky.
Anyways, Voxbox. There you go. There's really not more than to show than that. It's really just literally random audio clips that you send out, and then you get whatever back. Brian, edit that out, please.
Yeah, you're totally going to win this time.
All right. Well, hey, you know, I tried this a couple of days ago, and before the show, I didn't get anything that was not safe for work. So, of course, it happened now, but whatever.
Of course it did.
Is there a limit on the length of the clips that you can share?
I think the limit is 6 or 8 seconds. So it can't be a super duper long one. But yeah, so it's got to be short and concise and, you know, potentially offensive. Hopefully not, though.
Preferably offensive.
I guess so. If you're not doing a show, sure. If you're doing a show, apparently this isn't the best app to show off on the show. But there it is. It's Voxbox. It's with two X's in both. So Voxbox, and I don't know, kind of interesting. I like the design of it. I like the kind of the old school graphical UI of it as well. But and it's super early days for this app. I think there's like less than 100 installs on it that are reporting on the site. There's probably more than that, but it just isn't showing it yet. So I don't know. Phil, oh, it was Rando. Rando was the picture one.
Rando, yeah.
Rando, yeah. That thing was wacky. It was
send out a random image and get one back and everything. What I'd like out of this, note to the developers, and this, I don't know how people would feel about this, but if you could do the thing where you record people's reaction with the camera, like, they got to be okay with it. They got to agree to it. But then, at least as a sender, I get a little bit of satisfaction, right? Like, I do something really goofy and off the wall, and then later I can log in and, like, see what how people reacted to my thing. That would be pretty cool.
You know what? There's actually, I hate to say this, but there's an app that does that.
With random audio out into the world?
No, not with random audio, but it takes, it's photo reactions. I was gonna do it in the arena, but then I decided not to because I don't want to support selfies. But take a look. It's called Reactor, and the idea is that basically is like you send someone a photo, and then it's like Snapchat, but captures what you're when you look at it, and then sends it back, and then publishes it publicly, like what your reaction photo is. So yeah, it's weird. So, okay. But it doesn't have the audio aspect to it. But, you know, that's one step away.
So. Yeah, see, yeah, exactly. They all learn from each other. So yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if it's right around the corner. Yeah, there you go. Probably not going to win, but I thought it was neat.
No pictures of anybody's junk in that screencast. So
and you know what? You're not going to get any pictures of anyone's junk in Voxbox either. You just might get an earful.
There you go. Yep.
All right. Ron, what you got?
All right, so in this age of mobile phones and devices, one thing we have learned to do is express ourselves through selfies and things like that and photos and all that sort of stuff. There's a lot of photo expression going on, but not as much writing expression. And I came across this app, which has been available on iOS for a while, but they finally ported it over Android. It's called Notography. And basically, it's Instagram for words, if I had to sum it up. You can utilize their platform to type thoughts or ideas or anything that you might have. And then you can apply tons of graphic design templates that they've had amazing artists and designers develop for them to give your app kind of a look and feel. That's not the app, Jason.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a different app.
Oh, there we go.
So with Notography, what you can do is you can link it. You can link it to your Facebook and your Twitter and all that sort of stuff. It's got all enables all social sharing, so you can also post to Instagram or whatnot. But if you didn't set up an account, Jason, you got to go through setting up an account. So you might want to switch back. Yeah. So once you type in your thought, and it can be a paragraph, or it can be just a sentence or a quote or something like that, then you can go through and you can scroll through the different design treatments they have and pick the one that you like the best and then publish that. So Notography has a whole community already within their application, so you can scroll through it if you wanted to, you know, similar to Instagram, to see what people are posting. But or you can take your beautifully designed kind of posts and then export them out and post them to Twitter or to Facebook or to Instagram, wherever else you might like to go to. So it's real simple in that regard. It's basically Instagram for words. They're adding new designs and new type treatments all the time. A lot of the designs have different variations, so it's a basic design template, but you can change the color or the background or whatnot. I did one, so maybe we can go to mine so you can see there is a web component, so you can see posts. You can share them on the web as well, which is pretty cool. So you can see here, there you go, Brian, I'll give you this one. I just did this one earlier. It's very boring. But you can see here that when you go to it on the web, it shows you the text that you typed in. It shows the design, but then you also see a whole bunch of different kind of reactions people might have on the web and whatnot. So the app is pretty neat. It's well designed. Design is a key thing for it. You know, it's all about graphic design and kind of celebrating graphic design. Again, you can see I went very, very simple. If you are a fan of, you know, whether it's Wired's design or way back in the day, Raygun, or if you're a fan of the Helvetica documentary, this you'll definitely want to check out this app because it's a way to have fun with type. So it's called Notography. It's free in the Google Play Store. So check it out.
Very cool.
There you
nice.
Go.
And what are you looking at right now, Brian? Is this kind of like the online gallery?
Yeah, this is their explore option.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah.
And all this stuff is accessible within the app. So
yeah, sweet. There you go. It's so Notography, but it's Notegraphy.
Yeah.
So Notegraphy.
Notegraphy.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. Yeah. So there you go.
And if you want to go to the Google Play Store, the video is the video they developed for iOS. So it's actually got an iPhone, so it's not Android, but it's got a lovely British person narrating it. So there you go.
All right,
if you
cool.
like that sort
of thing. I do. Noble, what you got?
I have Endomondo. It's a fitness app, surprise, surprise. But it's actually one of the first fitness apps that I, sort of started using when I, you know, started really working out a couple of years ago. And what makes it unique is it's actually the highest rated distance-based running app. So it competes against Strava. One thing I like about it is that it actually allows you to sort of send pep talks to your friends. If you have a few of your friends on there, it has a nice way to sort of motivate your friends just by sending a little bit of text to it. It's very, very simple to use. It has a calendar. One big sell for me is that, you know, if you're listening to music while you're running or walking, it actually sort of maps, gives you the regular map like all other running apps, but actually tells you what track you were listening to at whatever milestone that you sort of changed pace. So in my case, I always get the whole, oh, wow, it's the Miley Cyrus or Wu-Tang Clan at mile 5, you know, stuff like that. So I think that's pretty cool. I do listen to Miley Cyrus and Wu-Tang Clan right next to each other. Very eclectic.
Understand. That's why your workouts are unique and effective.
Exactly.
So. Cool. Well, I'm quickly realizing that because I have absolutely no data in here, it's not the most dynamic.
It isn't the most
in-studio show, but yeah, the Play Store has the goods.
Yeah. So, for example, the calendar, you're able to sort of see, you know, sort of an overview as to when you last worked out. And actually, I should mention, it also tracks, you know, you can manually input like regular weight training apps. If you're not using LinksFit to work out, because it's clearly a better app, our app is, this is definitely a close second in my book.
Awesome. That is Endomondo Sports Tracker, and that is free as well, right? Yeah, that's free.
Free and pro, but definitely okay. Try out the free. Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Endomondo Sports Tracker.
Endomondo.
Cool. Good pick. All right. Now, Gina, now you get to show off the app that I launched into when Ron was talking about his app, because they're both named, well, they both start with the same three letters, so you can understand why I was thrown off.
It's okay, yeah. Jason. It's okay. You had a rough demo. We'll give you it.
You're right. I did. Okay, Gina, what you got?
You could show us how to set it up, and then we might have to look at the Play Store for actual data, because you kind of have to have it running for a bit to have data. Anyway, my app pick is called Notify with an exclamation point at the end. That's why I'm saying it that way. Notify. It's like Yahoo. and it's a notifications home screen or lock screen widget. So the purpose of this app is basically this. You get a ton of notifications throughout the day, right? But if there's only certain notifications that you want to see right away that are important just by sort of glancing at your phone, that's what Notify does. It's a widget that only shows notifications from the apps that you really care about. So you launch Notify and you choose a layout. It's actually quite a nice layout. The default free one is free, by the way. It's transparent. And you pick out the apps that you care about the most. I want to get notifications from Pushover, from WhatsApp, from Trello, right? Those are kind of my big ones. And then you drag and drop the Notify widget onto your home screen. You can also customize the size. There's date and times. You customize the size of date and time. And then as you go through your day, Notify will show you the notifications on your home screen widget or your lock screen widget with full preview. You tap on a notification to launch the app, which is really, really nice. It'll be kind of a scrolling ticker so you can see the entire text of the notification. And it's actually a lot like Dash Clock, except you don't need an extension. It works with every single one of your apps that has notifications. And basically just, you know, shows you the stuff that you want to see right there on your home screen or your lock screen without having to pull down the notification shade or wade through a bunch of notifications that you don't care about. Totally free, no advertising. You can upgrade to different layouts because you can select different layouts for the widget with an in-app purchase. I'm not sure how much. I think it's $1 or something to upgrade. Yeah, I think that Notify Pro is $1. Yeah, that's right. It's quite nice. It might not be quite as good looking as Dash Clock, but it's a quicker setup and easier because you don't have to hunt down extensions. Yeah, there's Jason setting
up. There we go. Okay.
Layout. No, yeah, so there you go. Right. So there's your Notify widget. And now as notifications from your various apps come through, they'll show up in that widget.
Cool. That's awesome. So they show up below or kind of?
Yeah, they show up below and they kind of stack. Well, depending on the layout that you chose. Right. Yeah, so you increase the size of the date. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so.
Exactly.
Extra space. Sweet. All right, cool. Notify with an exclamation point as if you were yelling it.
Notify.
There we go. That's
you keep saying it like that.
Notify.
Notify.
I won't really yell it because it'll hurt your ears. And I already hurt your ears once before with my app. So here we go. Four apps to vote this week. Voxbox, Notography, Endomondo Sports Tracker, and Notify. Go to aaapoll.com/160 to vote for your favorite app this week. Which one of those wins? Notify coming out in an early lead, it appears. We'll see where this
early.
One ends up.
It's too early.
There you go.
Far too early. Far too early. Mm-hmm. We're talking 8 total votes. And last week, your winning app, Gina, I think got somewhere around like 200 and some odd votes. So could go either.
There's a ways to go.
Yeah.
We got a ways to go. It's a long week.
That's right. Well, that is it for this episode. Noble, Ackerson, really appreciate you coming on board today. Great having
you
on.
Thank you for having me. I really had a great time.
You bet. We'll have to do this again. Where can people find your work online? This is kind of your chance to promote whatever you got going on.
Thanks. I'm normally at LinksFit. My business. I also I also founded the Society of Glass Enthusiasts. So if you look us up there, if you are enthusiastic about Google Glass, you can join. There are over 3,000 members, about 25 chapters around the world. We do wearables weekly on Thursdays about wearable computers. Surprise, surprise. Would love to have you on the show, all of you on the show, when, at any point. And that's pretty much it. I'm also on Google Plus. I'm one of the ghosts on Google Plus quite heavily. So,
right on. And that's Plus Noble Ackerson. Right on. Well, it's been great having you on board, and we'll have you back again soon, Noble. Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Ron, what's up with you?
Cool. Not much. The usual. You can find it all at about.me/RonXO, where you get links to my Twitter and my Facebook and my Instagram and my Google Plus and all that fun stuff. As well as last week, I talked about the Image Comics Humble Bundle, my day job where we make comic books over at Image Comics. You can see that's what we got going on this week. Humble Bundle continues for another week. And we just added 3 more books to it. So if you haven't dove into there, go to humblebundle.com and you can get all, I think, 12 books for – you can set your own price, and a portion of it goes to charity. It goes to the Help the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. So go check out humblebundle.com. So there you go.
There you go. Humble Bundle.
Yep.
And Gina, how about you?
When I am not here on Twit, I am working my day job, getting my company off the ground. It's thinkup.com. You can sign up now. It's analytics for regular people. And in addition to All About Android, I do This Week in Google here on the Twit Network. And that airs on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, getting my time zones right. So you should come on by and watch tomorrow with Leo and Jeff and guests.
Right on, Gina.
I love ThinkUp because it pointed out to me that I retweeted one of my favorite brands, and I boosted their tweet to 6,000 more people.
Oh.
Nice. Is when I realized that I have more followers than Drake's Cakes. Which is pretty cool.
Doing Drake's Cakes a favor. They should be sending you some free cakes.
Yeah.
That's what I'm like. Saying. They haven't taken notice of me yet, but I'm working on it. I absolutely am working on it.
And send ThinkUp them that insight.
And ThinkUp is helping me find that. Yeah, I should let them know that. Yeah.
Yes.
That should be at least good for some free yodels.
Absolutely.
Or some frosting. Just a little bit of frosting.
Yeah,
just a little bit. Instead of a full cake, maybe just some frosting. Yeah. Brian, I won't forget you this time.
What? Me,
I'm not
going to
forget you.
Oh, thanks.
Brian Burnett.
Finally.
Technical director extraordinaire. What about you? Deserve.
Not much. You can find me on Know How every week with Padre, who's standing off camera, fortunately not distracting me. And also on Before You Buy, we did this little thing. I had some coworkers.
The Street Blaster isn't trying to imitate a larger system.
So,
yeah.
Listed at
you're
having
interested
1,000
in
watts,
a giant,
but not really sure.
A giant true. Speaker thing that is ridiculous. You can check that out on my I had to get some help to do it, though.
It's too bad you guys don't have fun at your job.
Never have fun doing this stuff. So.
Yeah.
What about you, Jason?
Well, you can find me at about.me/JasonHowell. Follow my musical exploits at yellowgoldmusic.com. Been kind of quiet there, but I've got some projects working right now. And yeah, that's about it. Thank you, chat room. You are awesome. Thank you for always turning up in large numbers in the chat room and being the brain that I left at home. At least I can only speak for myself, but you guys are awesome, and thank you for always participating as much as you do. But that is it for this week. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. You can send us an email at AAA@twit.tv. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Android Show. We're also on Google Plus. Just search for All About Android there. You'll find us in the community, as well as an account, but mainly the community. We also have a Reddit, which kind of informs what we talk about on the show. That's twitaaa.reddit.com. You can find show notes and past episodes all the way back to the beginning at twit.tv/AAA. You can also find all of our episodes on YouTube and iTunes. And we're live every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific, live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.